to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And this is the most awesome state to be in. The sun has just gone down because of the time change. It was the most beautiful sunset right through there. And tell you what, the Houston Rodeo is taking place right across the street here. And the traffic in this area of town is absolutely crazy. But it is great to have you with us today. Today was just an absolute beautiful, beautiful day. And tonight is going to be a great program. So I welcome each and every one of you to the program tonight. And if you want to get involved, it's going to be a little different program, but I think it's going to be very, very interesting. I can't wait to get inside of what the mind and the life of our guest is doing tonight, and the mission and the visions that he has is just unbelievable. So I'm looking forward to that. But if you want to get involved in that conversation, 888-627-6008. And I have to tell you, the next couple months, we have some of the best guests that we have ever had. From last week to tonight and all the way through the month of April. So we want to make sure that you get this on your reminder and to get an alert that we're getting ready to go live. And you can tune in with us each evening, each Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Central Time. Next week, we have Adam Lanningham. And Adam actually has written several books, and he is going to be talking about special needs children. And a lot of people kind of overlook them. A lot of people categorize them and marginalize them. And he is an expert in that field. And he's going to talk to parents, teachers, churches, the medical field, all of those different entities next Sunday night on how to deal and better understand the needs that the special needs children have in this world. So that's going to be very interesting next week. Adam Lanningham. Want to appreciate all the different emails and the texts that we got on last week's guest, Jay and Gloria Mays. Just an unbelievable young couple that's going through so many ups and downs and so many valleys right now. And things are still going fairly well as can be expected for them. And we want you to keep them in your thoughts and in your prayers. Tonight, we are live also on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. I'm over here looking at my son is managing that from the other side of the world. And if you have any comments or thoughts, feel free to jump in there and put it there. Or you can just actually talk straight to the guests tonight and myself by calling the most wonderful people in radio, BBS Radio at 888-627-6008. And they will kindly patch you right on through to us in our program. So tonight, without any further ado, I want to introduce to you the founder and the CEO of Mission Generation Incorporated, Rocky Malloy. And I have an unbelievable page bio on him, but I really just want him to describe his life, what he's been doing, and what his vision is for the next years down the road for Mission Generation. And he has an awesome friend of our church and friend of mine, Rachel, Regis is one of his employees, and she is just a wonderful person. But I want to welcome Rocky Malloy to the program tonight. Rocky, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
And Rocky, where are you listening to from us right now? Where are you at?
We might not be very far from you. We're in North Houston in the Woodlands.
Oh, in the Woodlands. Well, that's exactly where BBS Radio has just moved from California to the Woodlands. So they are right there. So the radio station's really close to you. So, well, welcome to the program tonight. Rocky, tell me, I've read a lot about you. I've been on the sites and I've looked at all the things that this organization does. But the people that are listening tonight may have not heard of what Mission Generation's all about. But first of all, tell us a little bit about you, what you do, what gets you pumped up to get out of bed every day, and what you want to get accomplished before you go to bed at night. Just tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll go into Mission Generation, Rocky, if you would, please.
Well, what gets me up in the morning is bringing Jesus to children.
Wow.
And you know what? There was Jesus all around me, but, you know, I was the acolyte at the church, and I sang in the choir and everything else, but I just had this very strange concept of God. And that, because I didn't really, to just give you a little back, when I was 14 years old, I read my grandmother's history book, and it was different than the very history book for the same grade I was in school. So I didn't trust people, and I was afraid they changed the Bible like they changed my history book. So I thought the only way you could actually be sure to go to heaven was to be a martyr. And I kind of staged my life to put myself in that position, thinking that was the only for sure way to go, because I just didn't trust people.
And what made you think the martyrdom was going to be the way? Well, what gave you that thought?
Well, everybody goes, oh, you were a Muslim or something like that. It had nothing to do with that. It was just like, there was no fluff with that. If you were willing to give your life to Jesus, I felt like the Bible says, if you gave your life, you were worthy of life. And so that was the only true test. I mean, without any, you know, I felt like there could be no misinterpretation of that.
Yeah. Okay, so you had a little bit of doubt and distrust in people because the change of the history books from your grandma's to the one that you was reading at the time in school. That's interesting. Well,
what if they changed the Bible? I mean, you know, I was worried.
14, okay.
So I ended up, I became a captain, a merchant marine captain. Wow. And I was in charge of a vessel in Mexico. And I saw some really bad things happen to some Mexican nationals from the bridge of my ship. And, you know, kind of like on TV, I went there to ask them if they needed some help. And I'm thinking like blankets and food. I mean, you know, like you see on TV. And these people said they wanted some guns. They were upset, you know, because they just lost all their property and stuff. Well, as a captain of a ship, I had access to a lot of explosives and weapons. So I started trading them weapons for, they had marijuana. So next thing I know, I'm in the international drug business thinking I'm trying to help these people. I end up getting a lot of trouble. And almost my dream came true of almost being a martyr.
Wow. So things have changed since then. That's unbelievable. So you was in the selling drugs for for guns, trading off.
Yeah, I know it sounds like it, but it's not the classic bad boy story that got Jesus and turned good. I was trying to serve Jesus the whole time. I was just really delusional. But really, I was supernaturally, I mean, like I was sentenced to life in prison. People that went to prison with me were hung the day I got there. I mean, this was serious business. I was released supernaturally that day. So, and I'm thinking, how could I be that messed up? So it really, from that moment, it became it wasn't like a bargain I made with God, if you let me out. It wasn't like that. It was just, I was so thankful to be out of, I should be dead now. I should be in prison. So I just wanted to help other young people make quality life decisions based on the word of God and a personal relationship with Jesus that I missed somehow.
So because of the way you misinterpreted what life was all about in God and the love of Jesus and how you really had that relationship, you then, after you got released from prison, decided, hey, Lord, this is going to be the rest of my story. I want to strive to make sure kids know what's going on in life with the Lord.
It took some years for that to play out.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really know how it would, you know, how it would look. But yeah, that's what happened.
So did you immediately come up with this missions generation, or did you go, there was a lot of stuff in between that to make this vision, this ministry that is being seeded in you to flourish?
Well, I came back to Jesus, I mean, like for real, in San Diego, California. And people thought I was crazy. No, they didn't believe any of these crazy, you know, stories. And then opportunity came up to serve, to be like a missionary in the war, the Sandinista war.
Oh, my.
And not a lot of people wanted to go into a war zone. And they said, well, if all the stuff you told us was true, you've already experienced drug wars, so you could probably go. And I was thinking, yeah. So I was, you know, sincerely asking the Lord. And I felt pretty confident as where what he wanted me to do. And so I left and I went to be there. But when I was there, something happened that really impacted me in my relationship with just children.
Okay.
So the communists, I was right on the border of Nicaragua and Honduras, and the communists used incendiary artillery. So, you know, at night, I mean, during the day, it was small arms fire all around you. And then at night, you hear the artillery coming in, whizzing overhead, and you see villages on fire and stuff. And there was a MASH unit, just like the TV show MASH, exactly the same, tents and everything, really close to this, like, little hut I was living in with another, with two Dutch nurses that were there to minister medical aid to the refugees and another young man that was with me. And so one morning, after especially heavy artillery barrage, there was a lot of civilians outside this tent. And my job was, because I was a licensed CCAP and I had some medical training, was to create a kind of triage. The most desperate people in need would be first, and the less would be, you know, later to see the doctors. There was, I couldn't go into the tent, but I was, you know, helping people get lined up and patiently wait. Some of them were terribly burned. And there was a little boy, probably about 10 or so. He just tugged on me. And they spoke Mosquito. I spoke some Spanish, but I didn't speak Mosquito. These were Mosquito Indians in the very eastern part of the country and what's called the Mosquito Coast. And he asked me for a can of milk. And I had to ask some people to help me what he was saying. And so I sent one of the soldiers into the tent, asked the doctors in there if they had any milk. And they came out with a little can of powdered milk. So I gave it to him, didn't think anything else about it. Well, this little boy kept coming back about every 2 or 3 weeks or so, asking for some more milk. So I kept milk on hand so I could give it to him. Well, these children, you know, you opened your show with like trauma and, you know, ACEs and toxic stress. So you can imagine children in war, right? So these little kids didn't talk much. But over the period of months, I could finally get out of him that his mother had been killed that night. And he picked up his baby sister and ran into the woods because they lived in like little clearings, these little, I mean, we lived in the villages that were just, you would might think kind of just out of the Stone Age, very primitive. So he picks his sister, baby sister up, runs into the forest, the clearings, the artillery is really heavy, his mother's killed. So he shows up that morning looking for milk for his baby sister. So all this time, this milk was for his little sister. So she was too afraid to come into a clearing. As soon as she was surrounded by trees, she was, you know, terrified. So this went on, you know, and then I got ready to leave. I'm in a tiny little four-seater airplane, and I'd been working with Contra soldiers. So these soldiers just automatically, they would fall into rank. There was about 20 of them, so two rows of 10, you know, tight rank. That's just how they were. And we know we're never going to see each other again. So, you know, there's a little bit of emotion going on. These guys were battle-hardened soldiers. But then out behind them steps into the clearing this little boy with his baby sister. She had a really pretty dirty, you know, little white dress on, you know, is soiled quite heavily. And this little girl started waving goodbye to me, man, and it tore me up. And till then, I'd been working with these soldiers, and little kids would come around, and they were kind of like a nuisance. And at that moment, I realized is that I had this huge impact in this little kid's life, and I didn't really pay attention. So then I flew into a place that was heavily engulfed in the war, but now the war is receding. And it was backing up. The war's in the last months of the war. And when I got there, I just talked to the kids. So all the kids come around, you know, the new guy, you know, and I wasn't the same color they were. And so I found out that these little kids had no idea why fire came from heaven and killed all the dads were gone. When you walked in these villages, it was only little boys and very old men. All the other men were dead or gone, at least. And a lot of the younger men were soldiers, 10-year-old, you know, full combat, I mean, battle-hardened 10-year-olds. So I'm talking to these little kids, and they, you know, they have no clue. I just thought everybody knew we're in war. They had no idea what was going on. I mean, not a foggiest idea. So that's when Mission Generation was born, just taking care of children that were in a state of shock and stress and a toxicity that is hard to really reconcile.
Do you think, Rocky, there's a lot of similarity between what you saw on the war zone in an impoverished country to what you see on the streets of America in homes that are as nice as yours and mine, but the children are still being overlooked and they're dealing with their own personal war zones with their families, with what's going on around them? People are still overlooking them. Is there any parallels there? Anything that you can bring across from that country to this to say, hey, wait, it started there, but this is where I'm going to do the ministry?
Yeah, well, it started there, right? And it gave me a front row seat to, you know, really horrific impact war has on little kids. But when you talk to children here whose parents abuse them, or their parents abuse each other, or there's been a death in the family, or one of the parents have been incarcerated, or there's drug use in the family, or mental illness, those kids have that same distant look and fear as those children who were being bombed.
Do you think they're just as confused and lost as that little girl or the kids that were at the next place where you said he thought the fire was coming from heaven? And it's like, I don't even know what's going on in the world. I'm that confused. I'm that disoriented.
You know what, doctor? I'm not a medical professional. And, you know, I was maybe a second rate minister. I mean, but so I don't really know what's happening in the minds of children. But right now, we have about 16 million people in discipleship through our chaplains program. So we have a broad, you know, width of people. We from Spain to, you know, Nicaragua right now. So I think that it's relative that children that's experienced these toxic stress, the stress mechanism, their hyper alertness is so turned on. I think it has the same effect. I mean, it's damaging their mental capacity to communicate, to respond, as what we would consider normal human.
Yeah, I believe, like you said, that anxiety and that toxic stress has them at a level that there's no place for a kid to be a kid anymore. Where do they go to find hope? Where do they go to find rest? Where do they go to find confidence and how to be the right type of person and receive shelter, not physical so much, but emotional? Where do our kids go right now?
Well, you know what, Doctor, you told me that you have a lot of teachers that are online, and it's probably unfair, but the teacher has now become the stopgap to society.
Wow.
What our research has revealed is that just 7 seconds a day, just 7 seconds, just calling a child by their name and giving them eye contact and recognizing them is enough to bring them over and to build resilience.
Wow. We're going to take our first break, but that right there is something that I want everybody to be thinking about. Don't listen to the commercial. Just dwell on that, because 7 seconds to be able to bring a child from here to here with building resilience and having the confidence, having the ability to find hope within themselves, they need somebody to reach out. And on the other side of this break, we're going to let you know how Rocky and his organization and the people all around him are reaching out to the kids from the bottom of their hearts and making life-changing decisions for them and giving them hope for their future. And we'll be right back. 888-627-6008 for the next segment of Breaking the Silence. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back. And I want to let you know, we're just a few weeks away from When the Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope, the book that I wrote and just now being finished and getting ready to be sent off to the publisher. And it won't be very long before it comes out. And it's going to be all for the teenagers and 20-year-olds. That generation that I think, and Rocky, I'm interested in knowing what you think about this generation that of teenagers and 20-year-olds. Then I think we've let the ball drop. It's just like, hey, wait, the world's in chaos. I'm too busy trying to be an adult. Here, take care of it. Here's your phone. Go to your room. And it's a book that I wrote basically that I would have wanted when I was going through all my trauma, all of my abuse. What book would I have wanted on my shelf to pull out and go, what do I do about this? And that'll be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Do you think, Rocky, that we have let the kids down, not only the ones that need and depend on us for everything, because they're too young to do anything on their own, but even that generation that's in high school and college and young marrieds, that we've just kind of said, hey, the world's tough. Here's some duct tape. See if you can fix it and go on. Well, what's your feeling on that? Where are we dropping the ball?
Well, resilience is, you know, very important that we have resilience, but there's so many things going on in the lives of adults. I think that parents love their children. They want the best for their children. But I think sometimes that the very things that build character in us, Doctor, we've taken it away from our children. because we've tried to save them from the hardships we experienced. And in the process, we've kind of denied them the same character building experiences that we have.
You know, I've said this from the beginning that I can remember me even being involved in this type of work, that I really think schools ought to be filled with kids during the day and filled with parents during the evenings, of teaching parents how to be a parent. If you wanted to get your hair cut in the state of Texas, you have to have a license to do it. To be a parent, you don't have to have a license. You don't have to have any training. You don't have to have anything. You can just go out and do that if you can find somebody to mate with you to produce a child. But our parents are not equipped to know what to do with the kids. And I think they need some guidance too. And I'm very interested in what your program does on all of these realms of how do we start making an impact on a generation. I mean, what, the World War II generation, the greatest generation that, who was it, Mike Wallace that wrote the book or somebody like that, a news broadcaster, the greatest generation. They're all dying off. And we're the ones to fill their shoes. And we don't quite fill their shoes like they did. And the next generation, I think we really let them down.
Yeah. Well, it's time to catch up. I think the greatest generation that ever lived are the kids coming right out of high school right now. And they've got all the tools and all the tech abilities and the character and the networking and everything else. But like you said, the two biggest, most important things in the world are how to be married and how to raise children. And neither one of those things come with any, you know, there's no, if you're not, in my opinion, if you're not a Bible-believing Christian, man, you're completely without help. And even well-meaning Christian families or spiritual families, even then, they're, you know, they need, I think it's good to be in the network and get, you know, read books and counsel with older people of how not to make them, how not to mess up your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think even churches are missing the target on this. We bring them all in, entertain them a little bit, and send them all out instead of really discipleship. And I don't know too many places that get down and dirty of saying, hey, this is how to read the word. This is how to live the word. This is how to have those values and those characteristics inside of you and pass those on to the younger generation and have a foundation of truth. Truth is missing in our communities, in our world, not only in our country, but in our whole world. We don't know what truth is.
Yeah, truth is dangerous now because people get to decide what truth they want, right? So I think truth is a pretty controversial deal. But, you know, when I was in ministry in California, there was one little boy, cracked me up. He thought God lived in the parking lot because when his parents pulled into the parking lot of the church, they changed and got ready to go to church. So he saw his parents were very abusive of each other, verbally hit each other and everything. And, you know, sometimes in Sunday school, you get the whole story. And he told me, wow, God must be on the parking lot. So I'm thinking that parents, you know, there's so much of things that happen in church and church families that are never discussed. You know, just like, you know, abuse, spousal abuse, it's rampant.
And so with this mission generation, what is your hope? What is your vision to make a difference in these children? And hopefully it bleeds over to the parents, you know, with making an impact, a positive impact to change what they're not getting from the school or from home.
Yeah, it's really hard for the school to cover a parent that's not, I mean, it's really hard. The teachers have a really difficult time trying to do everything they're supposed to do, much less parent the kids, right?
Right.
So what Mission Generation does is we train people to be chaplains in schools. And we've got over 17,000 schools that use our chaplains overseas.
Wow, 17,000?
17,404 as the last report. So we have
now, these are chaplains. These are like a man or woman that says, I am the chaplain of this school. And right. They're in that school as a school designated chaplain, or is it volunteer, or how's that work?
There's almost 20,000 people that have been certified in our program to be chaplains in these 7,000 schools.
Wow.
80% are certified teachers, and so they're paid to be the chaplain. And when I say this, I know what people just rolled out. Oh, well, that would never happen here. Oh, it's already happening across the United States. There's chaplains serving in schools right now at the payroll. In 1971, the Supreme Court established that public funds can be used to pay for chaplain services in a public institution. And the case was decided at a hospital. Hospital paid a chaplain to service their needs. And still on the books, U.S. Senate has a chaplain. So I was informed by our legal team and a federal judge that the idea of chaplains is not a legal issue. That's already been decided. It's an ideology, but it's not a legal issue.
Yeah.
Now, we probably, probably going to be challenged on that. But when a chaplain works in school, it's very different than a school counselor, an LPC, a licensed, They can talk about any, and really right now in Texas schools, police are on campus.
Yes.
Those police can talk to children about anything. And I ask an officer up front, I say, can they talk to you about Jesus? Can you talk to them? He said, yep, no problem. So a child can go in, it says chat on these high schools across the state. So they're trying to encourage children to talk to the police, mostly about Crime Stoppers, drugs or stuff like that. But that child can walk in there and say, hey, man, I got a spiritual issue. I want to talk to you about Jesus or ever how they frame it. And that policeman can talk to them about it. So it's there now. In other states, in California, Indiana, Wisconsin, people are on the payroll, or at least they're in some cases they're not on the payroll, but they're there as volunteers, as chaplains, talking about Jesus in school.
So with what goes on in schools, police have their own chaplain program. I mean, when there's a major incident in a home, the police take care of the legal aspect, and there's a chaplain off to the side, and they enter in and they help mend the hurt that the family just went through, or if it was a death or an injury or domestic, so they know the wisdom of having somebody on guard, standby. I think it would be awesome not only to have the social worker there, but also to have that chaplain there for so many different issues that happen in school where the kids are like, how do we handle this? And that's what this chaplain program does?
Yes, and we encourage the parents to meet together when they meet with the student, or meet together with the teacher, because there's multilateral issues here, right? And so if a child goes to a school counselor, they can expect to be counseled on academics. If they go to a life counselor or an LPC or something like that, they can expect to receive other kinds of information, but it's all on their record. And my daughter, who's a junior in high school here, three of her friends tried to commit suicide.
Yeah, I'll just get ready to mention that, because that's major. You don't want that on the record, right?
That's right. So none of them are going to say, Dad, nobody's going to go talk to the counselor because it's on our record. And it could hurt our ability to go to universities and all these others. They're not talking. Now, children killing themselves is an epidemic in this country.
Oh, my lands. The second leading cause of death.
But now they could go to a chaplain, and it's not on a record because a chaplain has got confidentiality as a clergy, right? And chaplains service a secular need. So chaplains can talk to Muslim children, they could, just like in the military, right? So they can talk to any, it's not a denominational, a good chaplain, it's not about their denomination, right? So we don't, you know, out of the 20,000 something chaplains we have, we've never said you have to be a Christian, but nobody has completed, no one has completed the course that doesn't claim to be a Jesus follower.
So the main goal of the chaplain program, is it to push Jesus or to offer help and be Jesus-like?
It's a ministry of presence.
Oh, that's so good.
If they want to get evangelized, they can, you know, go to this wherever they want to go, right? So the chaplain's job is not to evangelize anyone. It's basically to be a ministry of presence, to listen, actively listen. And they're not even a counselor. Their job is not to counsel. They're not licensed counselor. Really, their job is to listen. And if the kids have got trauma, man, like when we open the show, they got a lot of things. You know, you pull a needle out of your mother's arm on the way to school and you eat breakfast at school, that kid needs to talk to somebody, right? And, you know, the teachers, I believe the way in, so teachers are doing, I think, a pretty awesome job. They're trying to deal with all these things. And you got children that don't know how to behave. They can't even communicate. They're so angry. They're so violent because of all the things they have to deal with. Well, a chaplain can diffuse those things, very unlike the other counselors at school.
That's so powerful. So you have these 17,404 or whatever counselors. That are those all overseas? How many do you have in the state here in the United States?
We serve every Spanish-speaking country in the world. Wow. And our program's also in Portuguese. We just launched it last year. So we're also serving about a million or so people in Brazil. Our program it took us years to line up all the legal aspects. And so this year we're building content for people that are chaplains or counselors or teachers that want to share more and do maybe a better job at meeting the spiritual needs of students. That'll happen this year while we learn more. Every week we're talking to other chaplains or other people, counselors, superintendents, whoever. And we expect to have a program ready for chaplains to be emergency certified. That's what we're looking at right now. So like, for instance, I just spoke with the Department of Education in Oklahoma. They recently had emergency certification for teachers because they don't have enough teachers. So if you have a bachelor's in anything, and if you commit to complete, then you can be a teacher. So we're talking to them right now about a bill that would emergency certify spiritual counselors or chaplains. Anybody with a bachelor could go in, and then they would take something similar to a LPC mixed with chaplaincy. And the superintendents I talked to said they'd hire them tomorrow.
Because they see the need for this.
Oh, man, there is such a huge need. Right now, and some of the school districts and the superintendents I spoke with, there's a year and a half waiting list. Now, the average age of children killing themselves is 14 years old. This is a middle school issue. And they got to wait a year and a half before they can talk to someone? That's not even, you know, come on. This
we
is
can
America.
Do better than that.
They just don't have enough people. So I'm thinking if we put Jesus in the equation, but the right way, right? We're not talking about Bible thumping and all that. We're talking about caring adults that love children and they want them to know they're heard and loved and cared for. And many times it does open a pathway to Jesus. I mean, that's the only thing that ever worked for me. So in the right way, I'm thinking it's huge. Then we can get the parents in and, you know, have a coming, you know, meeting to discuss what's happening at home and why this child is so ill prepared to do well at school.
Well, I'll tell you what, the challenge that you have ahead of you is huge, but the vision and God's dream of this is probably even larger than what we can even imagine, because this is something that is so needed. in our school systems right now. We're going to take our last break. And on the other side of this, I want to immediately, when we get back from the commercial break, Rocky, I want everybody to know how to get in touch with you. If they want to get involved, if they want to help support, if they want to just know more about. So I want to make sure you get all of that out, because sometimes we'll be chasing a rabbit towards the end of the program and I don't want to leave anybody short without that information. So when we come back, let's talk about that. Then I want to talk about what you do to help these children succeed in their life and to find hope in their life. So we're going to talk about that just on the other side of this break. 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back with the last segment with Rocky Malloy. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back to Breaking the Silence. We have an awesome guest tonight, Rocky Malloy, and from the Woodlands here, right on the outskirts of the suburbs of Houston. That's the fancy suburbs over there, the Woodlands. That's the good side of town. But it's great to have Rocky with us, and he's talking about his organization that he's the CEO of, Mission Generation. And with this vision, Rocky, and I think we're going to get into it a little bit deeper on this last segment. But if people want to get in touch, and you've hit some heartstrings because my phone's starting to blow up with text, how do people get in touch with you, your website, email, if they want to just give you some support or ask you a question or get involved?
Well, I welcome people to learn more about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, toxic stress, hope, all the things that are important to as a parent. Our website is very simple, just missiongeneration, just like it sounds, .org, missiongeneration.org. And the easiest email for me is rockymalloy@gmail.com.
Rocky Malloy, M-A-L-L-O-Y.
Right.
@gmail.com. Okay. Go a little bit deeper now. And Rocky, what you're hoping that the next year or two does in our country, and then how you give hope to children when you get the opportunity to be within reach of them in the schools.
You know, Doctor, what we have found is that hope is the best predictor of a child's future performance.
I love that.
There's 151 peer-reviewed papers. We work very closely with the University of Oklahoma Hope Research Center. And there's a thing called a science of hope. And a science of hope is a goal. It can be really small, right? Like waking up in time. And it's really for a person or a young person with low hope or low expectations, tiny, tiny goals are so important because it actually builds new receptors in the brain. So just a tiny goal, something, let's say waking up in time, and your pathway to that goal is an alarm. There could be lots of pathways. That's what's so beautiful. Everybody can have a different pathway. So as you build hope and expectation, You find a pathway, and if that pathway fails, there's another pathway. There's always another way to do it. So there's so much hope because you can get there. And we have found that helping young people and counseling them about hope and what hope means, a simple three steps, a goal that you'll be motivated to achieve, and discovery of a pathway to that goal. That's real simple, right? I said 3 points because then it's the willpower to stay on the goal, but that's choosing a goal that's important to you. And you'll know if it's really important to you or not if you actually achieve it.
Right.
And it can start off tiny. And it's phenomenal what happens to young people when they discover the science of hope.
So when they see progress, it starts stirring up the amber fires inside of them. And then before long, it goes, wait, my goal is going to get a little bit bigger, a little more attained. And it just becomes more and more, and it overtakes them. And they develop that hope.
Yeah, that's true. You know, as you know, a young person that does not receive the attention they need, you're talking about in the crucial years of life when they're an infant, right? One term is serve and return. So the child cries, no one attends to that child. There's actually a part of their brain that dies away. And people go, well, they've lost it forever. That's not true.
No.
There's a plasticity. And so hope actually rebuilds the part of the brain that would atrophied because of poor care or toxic stress.
Yeah, God has a miraculous way of the body healing itself. And the brain is one of those with the plasticity of it, that even if neurons have been cut off, those aren't forever cut off neurons. They can come back and reconnect. That's why there's so hope for me, because of what happened to me as a child. When you finally find that hope, things start coming back and it starts gathering back together. And this is so good. So good. I keep going about the hope with kids.
Doctor, you're a poster child for what can happen when there's, you know, after the fact, right? When there's enough love and attention. And it's really so simple, it's easy to overlook, of what it takes to build hope in a child. I know it's not fair that teachers have this basically a burden because they're not getting it home, but simple exercises in class and simple homework assignments, I mean, like really simple, builds the capacity of the child to communicate and advance to greater and greater so they can actually become productive and, you know, some of your best students.
Yeah, accomplishing, not always failing, obtaining something and getting that to that end of the finish line. So those little goals like that are huge for a child, especially if they're not getting any type of affirmation at home, any type of love and praise. But I agree, teachers really have their hands full. But when I speak in front of them weekly, I always encourage them that you may be that one person that is a champion for those kids that they don't get anywhere else in this world. And that's tough on them.
How many people that, you know, kind of made it in life and they go back, well, there's this teacher, right?
Yes.
I mean, it changed their life. We did an exercise in a school. This school had 825 students, and we wrote every name of the students and put it on a table. And with the principal, we asked every teacher to pull names off of every kid they knew. There was 23 children left in the middle of that table. There was 23 children that no teacher or the principal knew who they were. It shocked them that that could happen. And those little kids, just think how they felt. Nobody knew who they were, right? I mean, it changed policy at that school for teachers to say every child's name when they came to class. For a person to be at the front door to greet those children when they came in, just to acknowledge they existed, right? I mean, yeah. Walmart does it. When you come into Walmart, there's a guy going, hey, welcome to Walmart.
Yeah, you know, we had somebody
changed,
on.
It changed everything.
It does. A young lady that had been trafficked, just sex trafficked, was on the program not too long ago. And she came down to one person in her life that changed her world. And that was the security guard at the front door of their school every day, because he said good morning and he called her by name. And that changed her life. That's all it took. He didn't give
seven
her money.
Seconds, man.
He
seven
didn't take
seconds.
Her. Yeah, just that good morning and her name. To just know that somebody recognizes me and acknowledges my presence. That's so important.
It sounds so simple. I know. When the children come home, you know, I work a lot, and it's a shame, but I mean, I've worked, 15-hour days, for years. But just to hug your child, I love you. Just to say I love you, right? Just give them a hug. And there's so much we can do that really requires so little from us.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you recruit the chaplains for this program that is going to be going on here soon in the United States? I mean, do you actually actively recruit, or is it people that you know, or how do you come up with these folks that want to get involved?
We kind of look like Uber for Jesus, right? We have a very sophisticated tech team, and all this stuff is delivered digitally. I mean, how can I manage 20,000 chaplains working in 17,000 some schools in 23 countries? I would take an army of people to do that. I don't do that. What we do is we publish the resources that we get for free, right? So we offer a post-baccalaureate in these other countries for free. It takes 2 years to do it. And they make more money as teachers. They can service the needs of their kids better, but they're policed and they're supervised in that school system. So the background checks and all those other things, that's what the school systems do. That's why I love this so much, right? And just think if every pastor had a background check, that would probably be good.
I've had mine.
Yeah. So we take two groups of people. We take a group of people that want to deliver this to children, and we take a group of people that need it. And so we just bring those two together, and we have people waiting. We still have thousands of schools that want chaplains, thousands. And we're going as fast as we can, but we have a certain quality of service. But when we opened up Brazil, within 3 months, we were servicing over 1 million people.
That's unbelievable.
So in the United States, we see, okay, there are teachers that are no longer teachers because they just couldn't take it no more. But if they get to do this, they're already certified as a teacher, or they already have a bachelor's or whatever. And then the schools need it. They know it. They don't have enough people to do it. So all we do is we go online, we offer services to both sides. They come together. It looks like Uber.
That is great. That is great. We have about a minute and a half left, Rocky. Is there anything else that you want to share? First of all, I want to thank Rachel that works with you and believes so much in your vision. She's just one of our favorite people in our church. And I appreciate her hooking me up with you. But is there anything that you want to share before we close out tonight? Anything else?
Yeah, just pray for the children of this nation. They deserve to hear the truth of Christ Jesus.
Yeah. And who better to do that? And where better to do that in the place that they're at most of the time of the day? And that's the school.
If we don't get them in school, man, we're not going to get them. That people that make decisions for Jesus do so before the age of 15.
Yes.
So we've been locked out. This is America, man. We have a right to do this, right? The schools need it. The kids need it. Teachers need this. I know there's an ideology and there's a difference and all that, but you're talking about chaplains. Chaplains are the legal way to deliver this.
That's great. Well, Rocky, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I appreciate this. I'm going to keep in touch with you because I really want to know more about it and get involved if there's anything that I can do. But thank you so much for sharing your heart And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, you gave your email. Give it one more time real quick, just in case they want to reach out to you.
MissionGeneration.org.
is the website. You can do contact us through that, right?
Right. Well, my email is real simple. RockyMalloy@gmail.com. That's one, yeah. A very simple one.
Great website, too. I've been on there. It's wonderful. Thank you so much, Rocky. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you, sir.
Appreciate your time. Like we do every week, and I'm sure Rocky's going to join in with this in the background, like we do every week, no matter what you're going through in life, no matter what's happened to you, no matter what you're going through right now or what you're going to face tomorrow, lean into the camera right now. I want to let you know, and I promise you, there's hope. Never give up on hope. And Rocky was a perfect example of this. And this week, do something maybe for Rocky and for all those kids in this world. Stop and say hi to a child. Smile, wave, call them by name if you know them by name. Get down on their level and look in their eyes and tell them that you care. They need to hear that more than ever. Thank you so much for being with us this week on Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have a great week. Join us next week for Adam Laningham. He's going to be here talking about the special needs child. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.